Hello, I'm Anna Garde, Principal Consultant at Prospectus Executive Search Practice. We work in partnership with social purpose organisations to find talented and values-driven leaders and board members to deliver their missions. Welcome to our Leadership Impact series. This is the podcast where we explore the impact leaders are making through their work in the sector.
Today we're talking to Andy Harris, Director of Income Generation at Shelter. Shelter helps millions of people every year struggling with bad housing or homelessness through advice, support, and legal services. Their work focuses on defending the right to a safe home. Hello, Andy.
Hello.
It's lovely to see you today, albeit virtually.
Yeah, great to be here.
Oh, thank you for joining us to talk about your fundraising leadership and what's behind your award-winning career. I'll jump straight in. There's lots to talk about today. Across your career, you've grown voluntary income, including where fundraising's been failing for several years. And you've been at Shelter now for a couple of years. You've successfully grown income across all of the income streams. Can you tell us a bit more about how you've been achieving that?
Yeah, sure. I guess it's... I've always had a bit of a mantra that I've got lucky in each of the roles I've been in. But I do think you make your own luck in life. And I think some of that has been certainly focusing on people. Surrounding yourself with people that are more capable than you, and focusing on the team development. So I think when I was early in my fundraising career, and you met fundraisers from other charities, there were two or three organisations that always stuck out having developed really capable, great fundraisers. And it's always been an ambition to work with organisations that develop their team members. So if I look at Shelter, we've worked really hard, actually right across the charity, to shift and change our culture.
Yeah.
And to trust each other to perform and to, you know, devolve our decision making. And we've really worked hard on our case for support and a proposition.
Yes. You know,
I'm a firm believer in the kind of bit of a fundraising mantra about people give to people. They like, trust and admire.
Yeah.
We've never purchased something from somebody that we didn't like or didn't trust.
Yeah.
We're very responsive to that. And I think as fundraisers, you are selling something.
Yeah.
So you've got to be, likability is huge, I think. And you've got to trust your colleagues. And we've worked really hard on that at Shelter. And all the organisations I've worked at too, really make the charity a charity that fundraises, not a charity with a fundraising team.
Yes.
So we're kind of all in it together.
So does that mean you've been doing a lot of work across the organisation, Andy, as well?
Yeah, huge amount. I think it's a challenge to change at any time, but particularly to change people's kind of culture and behaviour. It's the things that are come naturally to us and ingrained, and we're creatures of habit. So I think we've... as a whole organisation, worked hard to change our culture, to shift our behaviours. And, you know, we're living in a rapidly changing world, changed, you know, monumentally in the last 10 weeks. So change is constant. I remember being told that 15, 20 years ago, and it's even more constant now. So we have to adapt and change and deal with the uncertainty. You know, I think we all strive for certainty, and we're now living in an incredibly uncertain world.
Yeah. So in terms of, and I want to pick up with you about the impact that COVID-19 has had on the organisation, but just staying with that cultural piece, which I think is really interesting. Can you tell us a little bit more about some of the practical steps as a leader and the senior team you've been working on together to really, I'm aware that culture will have come down a top-down approach, but also a bottom-up approach. Can you tell us a little bit more about some of the mechanics of that?
We worked on clarifying our purpose. So why does Shelter exist? And we've been really clear about our purpose being to defend the right to a safe home. So I think it in any charity, it should start with why does that charity exist? What is it there to do? We actually don't have values. We decided that we thought they were a bit cheesy, and they're not unique to Shelter and unique to us as a team. So we've worked hard on what we would call our mantras. So we've got a really clear purpose about shelter existing to defend the right to a safe home. And then we've given ourselves five mantras that as a team we work towards. And that's around, you know, shelter will change the country. Our enemy is social injustice. We're all one shelter. We say what we believe and we only do what meets our purpose.
Yeah, amazing.
And, you know, that was something that we co-created together. We did our largest consultation we've ever done at shelter.
Brilliant.
Talking to colleagues, you know, beneficiaries, volunteers, as many people as we could as a team to create those. And then as an income generation team, we've really taken those on board to look at our income generation plan to deliver against that. So I think, to me, the one that's really powerful is about we're all one shelter.
Yeah.
And we're in this together. And we are determined to be a charity that fundraises, not a charity with a fundraising department. Really understand how we can all achieve that. But equally, we're clear fundraising is a need to an end. You know, we wouldn't, without our campaigning and sort of service delivery activity, we wouldn't have a fundraising team.
Yeah.
And that's fine. That's why our strategy actually doesn't talk about fundraising at all.
Interesting. That's an interesting decision. Yeah.
It's because we wouldn't exist for that.
Yeah.
There are business plans for finance, business plans for our people and business plans for income generation, but we've only got one strategy.
Yeah.
With the words income generation strategy is banned. We have an income generation plan.
Wow, yeah.
We're all working to one strategy, and then we have a number of plans that deliver that strategy in a kind of strategic and operational way. But it's really important, I think, that we are all one shelter. And I've worked for organisations and seen organisations that tear themselves apart internally.
Yeah.
And you know, our beneficiaries need us more now than ever before.
Yeah.
And we have a responsibility to nail it, really, and do it for them. And, you know, Polly, our CEO, talks regularly about there's about 1,200 of us at shelter. There's not another 1,200 people waiting to do what we've not done.
Yeah.
You know, we are shelter, and we, you know, are proud of our history and our heritage, and we've got to, well, and we're definitely needed more than ever before in the tsunami of need that's going to hit the country when we get into the economic crisis.
And I think that's, having worked with you, having worked with Polly, having worked with other people in the senior team, I think that's really key, is that you have a very visible senior team, surprisingly so, actually. And I imagine that really feeds into the team approach.
Yeah, definitely. The visibility of leadership and I use the word likability.
Mm.
I think if you don't, it comes back to that point. If you've never bought something from somebody you don't, you know, like, trust, and admire, I think leadership is the same, and that ability to be generous leaders and to work collectively together and give people the clarity and stability and the accountability is ours. You know, we talk a lot about devolving decision making, but we're very clear as leaders of shelter that the ultimate accountability is ours. You know, if it's regular times, you know, go back to some of the CEOs of big banks that have lost their job because they've messed up an IT project. Actually, it's the CEO that gets fired, not the, I'm sure the IT director does too, but the kind of public face of that accountability. And that's, you've got to trust each other.
Yeah, absolutely. Have you built that trust as a senior team? Because there were some of the senior leaders that stayed on, some are new, including you. How's that all come together?
It's about, we worked hard at building ourselves together as a team, about being honest with each other, you know, about having fun. Building relationships with each other, and giving, you know, honest, credible feedback when it's needed.
Yeah.
And, you know, working right across the organisation, we try to leave, when we come together as a leadership team, our department hats at the door.
Yeah. It's
not about, I'm just here to protect the interests of fundraising or retail. We're the leaders of the organisation, and we should be able to understand each other's area of the operation and speak on behalf of each other. And if one of us are not at a meeting, we should be able to say, oh, if, you know, X was here, they would be saying this. So we should be able to understand each other's. And I think that comes from only having one strategy.
Yes, that's interesting.
We're all there. We're all responsible for, right across the organisation, for the delivery of that strategy.
Yeah.
It's clear, it's understandable, it's not a boring 100-page document that just sits on a shelf gathering dust.
Yeah.
You know, it's short and punchy and smart, and that, I think, came together from a co-creation of that document right across the organisation. So we kind of all own it and love it and buy into it.
I was going to say that helps with the buy-in, I'm quite sure. Getting people on board with that.
But, you know, all too often I've seen organisations where the leadership team have written a strategy and gone, given a kind of ta-da moment to their organisation, and then wonder why they don't get buy-in.
Yeah, yeah. And it's not collaboratively developed. And you're making a change in the structure at Shelter too, in terms of a new level of management, essentially. Can you tell us more about that and why that's been important?
Yeah, we've done that now. It was from a... Well, it's the first time we've brought fundraising and retail together at Shelter under kind of an income generation directorate. And we did that because of the, you know, you can't compartmentalise supporters into different categories. They see themselves as a supporter of Shelter.
Yeah. Whether
that's donating in our shop or buying something in our shop or making a regular donation to us. You know, all too often you see charities that, what I would call, compartmentalize their supporters. So, oh, I'm a individual giving supporter, or I'm a retail supporter, or I'm a corporate supporter. Mm. And we know that the supporters don't see us like that.
Yeah.
You know, if you are a shopper at Asda and you shop online and you shop in store, you're a shopper of Asda. You're not an online shopper or a store shopper. And we need to behave the same, really. And I think I've seen, you know, even in the past, month, lots of sector leaders calling on, you know, digital innovation and that ability to be really supporter focused.
Yeah,
and I think that's been a critical part of our reshaping of the team, and equally the team wanted clarity and simplicity, and we had a structure that people internally couldn't understand. So people wanted to understand what was expected of them, and equally it needed to be transferable right across the organisation. So we've now got, when I first joined Shelter, if you brought the kind of wider leadership team together, that was about 100 people. It's just too big.
Yeah.
So actually we now have, you know, a really clear and straightforward leadership structure where we've got an executive leadership team and then this kind of wider leadership team with a group of assistant directors.
Yeah.
So each of the directors has got their direct line reports are the assistant director kind of group.
Yeah.
And they are working hard as a leadership team too.
Yes. So
that ability to really, if we're going to devolve decision making, you've got to trust your team of leaders.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, absolutely. And let's talk a little bit about the challenge that we're facing. It is an unprecedented challenge that the whole sector's facing as it's responding to COVID-19. What's the impact for income at Shelter, and how are you planning for it?
Our income hit us quite hard. You know, we were due to probably be an income in 1920 of about 75 million, if we were lucky.
Right.
We think that will drop down to 71. We were unfortunate, as I'm sure a lot of charities were, that before Corona hit, there were those three storms in February. Over 3 weekends, if you cast back, there were kind of 3 weekends that absolutely poured down.
Yeah.
For organisations with a big retail footprint.
Yeah.
Bad weather at any time is bad for retail, but bad weather at a weekend was really bad for us. So really we had poor weather in February, which really impacted our retail operation. And then, Corona hit us really, really hard and quite quickly. We think it's the financial impact will be somewhere between 7 and 10 million, which is about 10 to 15%. I still think it's too early to see. Obviously, we, along with other charities, have seen our retail impact kind of hit us quickly.
Mm.
You know, our shops raise about £28,000 a day.
Gosh.
So every day that we're not open, our income is £28,000 lower from a retail perspective, as well as, just like every other charity, we've seen our events income be hit very quickly. So, you know, this week, cancellation of Ride London and the London Landmarks Half Marathon are not good news for us. And we equally are financially planning that the London Marathon won't happen either.
Yeah, of course.
You know, I think it's unlikely given that format. So we kind of, our events income hit us quickly in third-party events, and our owned events, we've had a quite iconic event called Vertical Rush, which is kind of a tower climb, which we had to cancel a few days before the event, which was kind of scheduled for mid-March. We worked really hard to switch it to a virtual product, which did well. We got some good social content and certainly good feedback from others in the sector. But it performed financially okay, but it wasn't as good as the event had happened. So from that perspective, you know, the challenge is, like a lot of charities, our income is under huge strain at the time that our need is greatest. And that challenge. Yeah. And rightly, there's been a focus from funders on kind of funding small charities, but actually,
I think that's
great, but it's a sticky plaster.
Yeah,
and, you know, being a trustee of a small charity myself, it's what worries me is, you know, we've had great support from trusts and foundations with emergency funding, but it is simply a sticky plaster.
Yeah,
to think about what that, you know, how are they going to raise the money in 12 months' time when we are in the grip of this economic disaster that is happening at us quickly? And I worry about that. So I'm worried about the impact now, and I'm worried about the impact in the future. And we know, as fundraisers, we're focused on the short term, you know, as in, can we hit our target this month? But equally, what preparation are we making to nail our long-term income in, you know, years 3, 4, 5, and that's where I'm kind of concentrating my time on the here and now, but equally the long-term activity. So that's where I worry.
I was going to say, how do you plan for that shortage of 10 to 15% income? What does that mean to the service?
Ultimately, well, at the minute, charities have got reserves for a rainy day. And as we say, it's pouring out there.
Yeah.
And so we've got a great, as a leadership team, we've got a really strong relationship with our board. And they've been really supportive. And we will, take a reduction on our reserves as a result, as well as. It's that kind of balancing our investment in income now and income in the future.
Yeah.
So pausing all of our kind of donor acquisition. Got a kind of a large in-house direct dialogue acquisition team. So pausing that activity has a net financial benefit in the first year.
Yeah.
But actually, we know that in our modelling, a three-month lockdown, so April, May and June, where we are not acquiring any donors from our direct dialogue activity. So, you know, on the door, on the street or on private sites, by year five will cost us somewhere between 3 and 3.7 million in lost income. So it shows the future disaster for organisations that aren't concentrating on their long-term income. So we will, it's net positive in year one, but will, you know, cost us in lost income in future years. And that's where, you know, it has always been a focus at Shelter, but even more so on the retention of our current donors.
Yeah.
So, yeah. You know, I talked to our board that, you know, our donor acquisition is a bit like a bucket. You pour donors in the top and some drip out the holes in the bottom of the bucket. And actually, if you can't pour donors in the top of the bucket, you've got to plug the holes.
Yeah.
And so we, and I can see organisations the same, really working hard on plugging the holes. And there are, you know, that's something all organisations have been doing and should be doing for years. But I think it is now of critical importance. So we've been working hard on our donor loyalty and trust to really understand that, you know, on Giving Tuesday, I think like a lot of charities, we did a bit of a thank-a-thon with our supporters.
Yeah.
So we contacted as many as we could. And, you know, most people in the organisation had a list of between 30 and 50 people to call. So, you know, it was amazing to, I spent a few hours talking to supporters of Shelter that have been donating regularly for 18 years.
Oh, amazing.
So, you know, these were people that have given us 10, 20, 30 pounds a month for 18 years. Just incredible.
That's amazing.
Of our supporters. Yeah. And actually the joy in being able to speak to them and say thank you and update them in what we're doing at the minute and what their donations have helped us achieve. And I think that really helps organisations that want to be fundraising organisations. You know, some of my service colleagues are rightly uneasy about asking somebody for money.
Of course.
Because we're all frightened of rejection. Actually, phoning somebody up to say, hey, I just wanted to say thank you, is the easiest thing in the world. And our supporters loved it. Our staff loved it. Particularly, you know, we've worked hard recently to what we would call hero our frontline workers.
Yeah.
Make our frontline staff and colleagues the kind of hero of our campaigns and activity, because they do and continue to do an awesome job.
Yeah.
We are proud to hero them, and our supporters are responsive when we do hero them. So actually, you know, if you've been donating to Shelter for 15, 16, 17, 18 years, to get a call from a frontline services worker, just say, hey, I'm just taking a break from taking calls on a helpline because I wanted to phone and say thank you.
Yeah.
It's a win-win.
Yeah.
So we'll definitely be something that we will, you know, continue to do and continue to really focus on our donor retention.
Yeah.
As all charities are doing and should continue to do. There's loads more that we should be and could be doing to deliver that.
And I mean, in a normal time, Andy, you're achieving a huge amount in your role. You balance a busy family life. You've also got enormous pressure on you right now, both as income generation director, but also leading an organisation, which, as you say, is so crucially needed. What support do you get for yourself inside and outside of work to make sure that you keep your resilience and your energy at the level it needs to be?
So I think it's about not taking yourself too seriously at times. We've been doing fortnightly kind of department-wide Zoom meetings, and each one of those had a theme. So I've been dressing up.
Nice.
But I think it is equally, as a leader, I've talked a bit about, you've always got to have Disney hands, even if you're feeling really crap or you're worried, or you've got to keep the show on the road. And it's about opening up those emotions too and being honest with people.
Mm.
And certainly some of the team responded in the early days with some of our kind of regular communications of talking to them about as people.
Yeah.
And being open and honest, and equally say if you're struggling, you know, I use the Disney hand point, but equally we've worked really hard on kind of Wellbeing Wednesdays and trying to keep active and fit and talking to each other. As well as in the kind of the first month, I did get into a routine of walking to work and then walking home.
Nice.
So I'd leave the house at 8 o'clock and go for a half an hour walk, and then come back and start work. And then when I finished work, going for a walk either, because I really missed that commute time to unpack.
Definitely. No, I completely do that. Mine's been Pilates stretching, but it's getting shorter and shorter each morning, I have to say.
Yeah. But I have habits though, don't you, see?
I know. I have to ask though, what did you dress up as?
That's a long story. We had a Eurovision theme last week.
Great.
Because Eurovision should have been last Saturday, but it was cancelled. So I reenacted Waterloo.
Is that recorded anywhere that we can see that?
With a toilet seat. So
wow.
Yeah, it was good. The sad thing was it was a used toilet seat, which I did clean.
Very nice. That looks amazing. We're seeing an amazing picture right now.
So, yes, I think about not taking yourself too seriously. If you're struggling, I think saying you're struggling, I think people respond well to that. But equally, I'm aware that you've got to keep the Disney hands going. And, you know, I talk to colleagues that say, oh, you know, in the middle of a leadership team, you know, they found it, people were opening up about their emotions. So I think that's that ability to celebrate together, you know, cry together, perhaps in that sense is good. And I think working at home is a massive challenge on anyone's mental health.
Definitely.
But I think as a team, we talk about the new normal, and the normal is never going to come back to where it was before. Mm. And how are we resilient and work well in that new normal? And there are shifts to our culture and our behaviour that we want to get rid of, but there are things in our new way of working that people are really enjoying.
Yeah.
And, you know, there are positives and negatives in any situation, and it's about working out what the positives are and what the negatives are.
Yeah.
And, you know, we know at Shelter as a charity and a team of people, you know, this tsunami of need is going to hit the country massively. You know, we did some research recently. We said 1 in 5 private renters in England expect to lose their job in the next 3 months.
Yeah.
And, you know, we know the biggest cause of homelessness is financial worries and not being able to, you know, pay your rent or pay your mortgage or that activity. And it worries me. And some of the financial institutions that we've talked to have got, you know, a reasonable safety net for mortgage customers, you know, Nationwide. They've been an amazing partner for Shelter over a decade, have, you know, come out publicly, I think, and said that they're, you know, none of their mortgage customers that can't pay their mortgage will be evicted within a year, within, you know, kind of a year's time. And they've got a great safety net around that. Whereas they're, you know, the massive proportion of people that are renting, you know, we always say we're one paycheck away or two paychecks away from a bad decision. And I think, you know, to have 1.7 million people in England saying they expect to lose their job in the next 3 months, I think is just staggering. Even when you then look at the news of the number of people that already have applied for Universal Credit, when, you know, umpteen million people are in this job retention scheme. So I think, you know, we talk about the cliff edges at Shelter, and there's a, you know, massive cliff edge around when the suspension of evictions is lifted. Mm. But equally, I think when the job retention scheme starts to come to an end.
Yeah.
You know, we're going to see a huge amount of people that need the expertise that shelter can provide. And you know, I always come back to, you know, when I joined shelter and still now encourage as many of my income generation colleagues as possible to understand and go out and see what we do on the front line.
Yeah.
And, you know, some of those people I met and continue to meet are what always reminds me of the need of shelter.
Yeah.
And the need for credible, easy to understand information delivery.
Do you think it's an opportunity to look at homelessness through a completely different lens?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I think the problem is people don't know what to do for the best. So, you know, the one thing, you know, when I worked at breast cancer care, the number of people that told me their medical ailments and asked me for advice, and I'm a fundraiser, here's our helpline. But lots of people talk to me and say, I see somebody that's homeless and I don't know what to do.
Yeah.
You know, what do I do for the best? What can I do to help? Do I give them money? Do I not give a street homeless person money? And equally, that massive, what we would call the hidden homeless.
Yeah.
You know, the people that have no choice but to sleep on the streets are the kind of the tip of the iceberg.
Yeah.
And actually the people that are in, you know, unsuitable temporary accommodation, you know, how we are all at the minute enjoying the safety and sanctuary of our homes, and we're working from them and we feel safe in them and secure in them, you know, and we can socially distance. You know, imagine being in temporary accommodation with two young kids where you're sharing a kitchen and a bathroom.
Yeah.
How do you socially isolate there? And we know there are hundreds of thousands of people in the current that are currently in temporary accommodation and unsuitable temporary accommodation. And I just can't imagine what it's like being a single parent with two young kids in one room where you're sharing a bathroom and a kitchen with other people.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And I think it's interesting to see how quickly we've been able to get some emergency response, and that could potentially be an opportunity to extend further support as well. Andy, lastly, what impact do you feel you've had in the sector, and what would you want your legacy to be?
I really struggle with the legacy part because I don't think I'm finished yet.
Well, that's good.
I think it's about, you know, I've worked with some exceptional fundraisers over my time in fundraising. I'd like to see, and they've gone on to incredible stuff and are actually a million times more capable than me for that delivery. So I've got a great network of ex-colleagues that are working hard in the sector and have kind of taken time to touch base with a few of them. Recently, I think it's, you know, I always say time is my biggest enemy. We don't have enough time. It's the one thing that we can't magic up. And so I think, and hindsight, I'd say, is a big thing. I always think hindsight's a wonderful thing. And I think it's about, somebody said to me early on in my career, it's about making time to reflect and work out what went well and what you could have done better. Mm. So I would say the other thing is my other point, I guess, as a sector would be, it's okay to talk about failure.
Yeah.
I think we started to talk about it as a sector, but I still think there's so much more we can do to talk about what works. It gets kind of lots of conference presentations, but actually what didn't work and why it didn't work. Because we see it as a personal failure. It comes back to the kind of conversation about the Disney hands, but it's okay to be in touch with your emotions and say, oh, I'm really struggling, or can you help me with this, or actually this hasn't worked. Yeah. And you know, I worked really early on my career with a CEO who always used to say, you've only got to be right 51% of the time.
Right. Yeah, that's great.
Which I thought was a really, it's really stuck with me, really. So, yeah, those would be my, I think, and equally, I think I've helped. So what would be my legacy and the impact? I think I've helped organisations that are really struggling to understand fundraising and why they need it. You know, I quite like working for organisations that have really, the relationship between fundraising and the rest of the organisation has been troubled. Mm. And they kind of clash together and they, you know, all charities need fundraising. But it's about that relationship together and understanding. And I've always been clear that I work for a charity to make a difference. You know, we don't work for a charity to become, you know, really rich or famous. We work for a charity to make a difference. And I'm passionate, you know, about social inequality. Mm-hmm. And I've, you know, even in my trustee role, that opportunity that we should all, you know, we need a fairer society. And that is what we should, you know, strive to do. You know, we talk as a income generation team at Shelter that we power Shelter's fight against social injustice. Mm. Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Does that help? Sorry, it's not a great answer, really, is it?
I like it. I think it's a reflective answer. I think it's one that shows that it's still work in progress in terms of reflecting as well. But thank you so much, Andy. It's been great talking to you today.
Pleasure. Enjoyed it. Thank you.